Blog Talk Radio.
Dr. Karen Can Radio Show. The intention of this show is to empower and inspire you to manifest the life of your dreams, whether it's radiant health, prosperity, loving relationships, or simply peace of mind. Thank you so much for joining me. I'm your host, Dr. Karen Can, author of the Amazon number one bestseller, Guide to Healing Chronic Pain, A Holistic Approach. And if you don't know my book, you can get a free excerpt right on my webpage. Just go to www.karencan.com. Put in your name and email address, and I will email you as soon as possible with that link that you can download that excerpt. And you also get access to 5 of my Fast Track Your Health online webinar classes. So I hope to chat with you on Facebook or connect with you through my blog. That'd be really fun. And today we're going to be talking about a superfood. Now, when you think about superfoods, what do you think about? I know in the past when I thought about a superfood, I'd think about, okay, what are they writing about? They're writing about antioxidants. So I'm thinking acai berries, you know, maki berries, blueberries, maybe chia seeds I've heard are superfoods, or avocados. So I'm thinking of all these vegetables, right? And so along comes a couple of articles about liver, and I'm thinking, ooh, hated liver as a kid. In fact, our family, you weren't allowed to like not eat something. You could pick one thing out of the entire, you know, gamut of food that you could say no to. And I chose liver. Why? Because I didn't like the way it was cooked. The texture was awful, yada, yada, yada. So I never ate liver growing up. And then interestingly enough, my sister loves liver, which is really funny because we are both opposites. But now having revisited liver and
Karen, are you there? Karen, are you there?
Let's see here. Okay, let's see.
Hi, Karen, I'm back. I don't know what's happened.
Yay. Oh, Well, technical difficulties.
That's strange. I called a few times. I'm so sorry. I hope I didn't disrupt the call too much.
Oh, no, that's okay. That's okay. Well, you know, things happen. It's not a big deal. Well, we're anxious to hear about liver. Now here's what I said to my girlfriend when I told her I've been eating liver lately. And the way I eat liver now is to make it with tons of butter and a pate. That's the only, you know, the palatable way I can make it, and I like it that way, or liver pills, so to speak. And she looked at me with this funny look, and she said, you know, the liver filters all this stuff, all these toxins. Why would you want to eat an organ that, you know, filters and, you know, conjugates all these toxins? Wouldn't you be eating toxins? So that's kind of like one of the big question marks everybody has. And we're like, okay, so liver is nutritious. What's your opinion and point of view on all this?
Yeah, they call liver a filter, and it's really what it does is it actually neutralizes toxins. So it's not really it doesn't really store toxins per se. That's sort of a myth. What liver might store might be things like metals. It also might store some parasites. But it is a myth that it's overall people have this idea that liver stores toxins, and that's not true. It really just neutralizes toxins. If there are parasites, if anybody is concerned about parasites in the liver, they should really just hopefully solve that problem by putting the liver in the freezer for a couple of weeks, and that should take care of any parasites. Where metals are concerned, of course, hopefully the animals are raised in an organic setting where there won't be any residues like arsenic or copper from some of the agricultural sprays. So hopefully that will reduce the chances of the animal storing too many metals. So at any rate, there are ways to work around it, but liver is indeed the most nutrient-dense part of the animal, aside from other organs as well, but it's the most popular organ meat of all the organ meats. So if people can palate the taste of liver, they should certainly eat it the way our grandparents used to eat liver, right? It is part of our history for people to eat their liver once a week, right? I mean, that's what our parents and grandparents used to believe, is to eat liver once a week. And when, when we were hunter-gatherers, of course, the organ meats were the first part of the body that we would eat, because these organs were the most nutrient-dense part of the animal. These were the sacred foods, right? So we need to eat these foods in order to optimize our nutrient intake. I mean, that is just a powerhouse of nutrition right there in the liver. So, and what you're saying about the palatable taste and so on, there are some things I notice with people on how they have to go about ingesting their liver. One way is to enjoy the pâté. A lot of people enjoy liver via, you know, a variety of different pâté recipes. That's one simple way to try and get the liver in. I actually enjoy fried liver and onions with bacon, and I fry the liver in animal fat, hopefully. So butter or lard, something along that line. So it's nice and fatty and it's delicious. But one of the mistakes people make when they cook liver is they overcook liver and it becomes really, really rubbery. And what you have to do is like fish, right? Fish is very similar, Karen. When you cook fish and you cook it too long, the fish becomes kind of rubbery, right? But when you cook it the right length of time, it's nice and tender and it almost melts in your mouth. And I notice the same thing with liver. So really, you can cook liver up in about 5 minutes. It doesn't take long. But don't overcook liver is my message. And you might do it wrong, you know, the first couple of times, but after a couple of times, you should master it.
Ah, so you're saying, if you cook, because the bacon smell is awesome. So if you cook it with bacon, like your bacon's almost cooked, I guess, and then you cook it in the bacon fat, you're saying maybe 5 minutes, and is it okay if it's still a little red? I mean, how long is okay?
You can get the pan ready by cooking the bacon a little bit in advance, right? So, but you can add extra. I always like to add extra fat anyway. So, so you know, the fattier the liver, the fattier the meats, even steak, sometimes I'll add extra butter, you know, just to make sure there's enough fat in there so I can assimilate the minerals and the protein, right? So it's the more fat, the better, as far as I'm concerned. And that's why some of the traditional recipes do include bacon in terms of frying the liver in the skillet.
I see, I see. Well, and then what about, now you're saying the liver is really nutritious, an organ needs in general nutritious. And when I grew up, we ate liver, well, I didn't, but we offered liver, you know, at least once a week, and then kidneys a couple times a week. And, you know, occasionally we'll have some other rarer things, like, you know, one time they tricked me into eating cow brain soup, which was very good, but I didn't know what I was eating as a kid. And various different, you know, but basically kidneys and livers were the big one. Heart occasionally, which I thought was pretty cool. But what is it about the liver that's so nutritious?
It's a powerhouse of B vitamins, for example. Plus, you're going to get a lot of minerals in there as well. So, and of course, it is really, really high in the fat-soluble vitamins. So B vitamins are very high. Minerals are very high, and the fat-soluble vitamins are very dense in the organ meats in general. So this is just, I mean, it's just a powerhouse. I mean, it's like when you talked about some of the superfoods earlier on before we lost our call here, you know, some of those, it's too bad that the media and the health industry is pushing, you know, some of these foods as being superfoods, you know, because they really are not superfoods, the list of foods that you gave earlier. What is really a superfood is things like liver, something like liver or red meat even, or butter. These are much more nutrient dense than the list of foods you gave earlier. You just can't, I mean, you can't even compare an apple, for example, to the nutrition you would get out of liver. And when so, what some people do is, if they can't tolerate the pate, if they can't tolerate, you know, frying up some liver in a skillet, then some people I know actually cut liver in cubes and freeze them in the freezer, and they almost take them like a vitamin supplement, you know, so maybe a
Right,
tablespoon or
I
something like
tried
that.
that. Yeah, I had a hard time just because I lumped them all together out, you know, after they were frozen, they kind of stuck into a big mass. So I think you have to kind of keep them separate. So sometimes
Yeah,
they
you
don't
can get
stick
just an
together.
ice cube tray and just separate them out in an ice cube tray,
Yeah,
and you
that's a
take,
great
you know,
idea.
some of my clients take, you know, a cube of liver every day. And that's a much more practical way to do it rather than to push back a bunch of supplements.
Right. Well, what about you know, there's several different companies that make like freeze-dried grass-fed liver. Like, what do you think of those supplements if people can't do
You know,
stuff for
I
organs?
do some of my clients might be taking that supplement. I'm more practical. I much more believe in taking the food rather than the supplement. But if that's what it's going to take for people to get liver down, I suppose it's probably better than not taking anything with liver in it. So yeah, there are some freeze-dried liver supplements people can take. But I would much prefer people eat the liver. I think it's just a much better, more practical way to go.
And how often do you recommend people to eat liver?
The once a week mark is good. You know, our ancestors had a lot of wisdom, and I think there must be something to it. I don't know about you, Karen, but sometimes in the past, I mean, my energy is good right now, but when I had chronic fatigue before I got propagandized by the vegetarian camp, I would eat liver. And I wasn't feeling very well, and I knew, you know, the mantra about eating liver and getting energy from liver. You know, the liver contains something called the anti-fatigue factor, by the way. And I remember having that cause and effect relationship when I would eat liver, and eat liver right after I would eat the liver, I would feel better. I would have some energy. So yeah, there is, if people want to look it up, you can look up liver and the anti-fatigue factor. So it can give you a boost of energy simply because I think it has a lot of nutrition in it. I think that's where the energy is coming from.
Wow, that's fantastic. Well, and when I look up, you know, kind of like the nutrient composition, then there's a lot of vitamin A as opposed to, say, muscle meat. And then I know the answer to this, but I want you to tell our listeners anyway. And then, you know, people say, why, you know, take a vitamin, or I eat a lot of carrots, or I eat a lot of vegetables with vitamin A in it. So, you know, isn't all that vitamin A dangerous for me, for the liver?
Oh my goodness, I know that's one of the greatest myths out there. And it's one of the most dangerous myths out there, is that we're getting vitamin A from things like tomatoes and carrots, and that's just not true. And another thing that's being perpetrated on us, of course, is to think that vitamin A is toxic. And so, you know, that might stop somebody from taking something like cod liver oil or eating liver for that matter. And that's just a travesty, in my opinion. Vitamin A is a crucial fat-soluble vitamin. And since we have been reducing our consumption of foods like liver, butter, red meat, eggs, of course, we're sicker, fatter, and more depressed than ever before in the history of mankind. And when you look at the work of Dr. Weston A. Price, and he studied these primitive cultures who continued to celebrate eating their traditional ancestral foods, including organ meats, you know, their diets were very high in these fat-soluble vitamins, including vitamin A. And so when you look at this vitamin A phobia that has been perpetrated on society, it just doesn't make any sense, because these primitive cultures that Dr. Price studied, you know, were eating diets very high in vitamin A, and they were radiantly healthy. So it just doesn't make any sense that we should be phobic of eating foods that are rich in the vitamin A. But certainly, absolutely, Karen, your warnings about, you know, thinking that there's vitamin A in tomatoes and carrots, I mean, that's a very serious issue. And if you're eating a can of tomatoes, for example, and it says that there's vitamin A in that can of tomatoes, there's not any vitamin A in that can of tomatoes. There's beta-carotene. And beta-carotene is not vitamin A, but the food industry will have us believe that beta-carotene is vitamin A when it's not. It's a different molecule. And to convert that vitamin A in our bodies to that beta-carotene to vitamin A in our bodies is a really difficult process. And if people are sick in general, of course, that conversion from beta-carotene to vitamin A is going to be compromised. So we can't rely on beta-carotene at all to be a source of vitamin A.
Oh yeah, that's really, really interesting. As medical doctors, as you probably know, we don't get a lot of help in the nutrition department. When we go to school, we spend years, you know, learning about surgeries and drugs and the latest techniques and how to diagnose people, but we get a couple of hours maybe if we're lucky on nutrition. I think I fell asleep during those classes. They're very boring to me because they were very
and look where you come to now. This is great.
Oh my gosh, yeah. I think my mom thinks it's hilarious. I mean, seriously, she thinks it's hilarious I'm doing a show on liver, because she's like, what? You hated liver as a kid. I can't believe you're doing a radio show. Liver.
Have you ever done a blended liver smoothie? Have you ever tried that?
I was going to ask you about that. Oh my gosh, you read my mind. Okay, tell us. How do you do that?
No. It's what some people do, and this is only for the very, very brave, you know, the people who can handle the taste. And it can taste really good, so don't get me wrong. But if you blend raw liver in a smoothie with, say, tomato juice and some onions and garlic, salt and pepper, it can actually be a really good smoothie.
but it's not
for the faint of heart. It's certainly not for the faint of heart.
Okay, what about...
But there you're going to get... I mean, you talk about... If you're an elite athlete, right? If you're an elite athlete and you want to have something to, you know, give you some energy, help you sustain your energy during your sport. I mean, that is just a powerhouse of energy right there. You know, a raw liver smoothie.
Wow.
Not these Gatorade drinks and all this crap on the marketplace. Oh my gosh.
All the sugar, the whey. Well, you know, they have these so-called studies, right? That says that, you know, if you drink something with carbohydrate and whey, you know, after your workout, it's better for you. And maybe that's true, but maybe we have some other alternatives, you know, to all the sugary stuff.
Oh, yeah. This is way better. I see. I play tennis, and of course, and I play doubles. I don't play singles because I don't want to wear down my adrenal glands again. So doubles is nice and gentle on my adrenal glands, because it's very, very anaerobic, right? So there's not a lot of running and so on. But at any rate, so I play a lot of tennis, and everybody is drinking those orange and red and green and blue drinks. It's like I have to keep my mouth shut, of course. But it's they believe them to be healthy. You know, they believe that they're going to hydrate better or get some nutrition out of these drinks, and it's nothing could be further from the truth. If anything, those drinks are going to make them much sicker.
Well, there's certainly a lot of sugars, and the coloring alone is not very, you know, just the thought of them kind of now makes my stomach turn. But getting back to the liver smoothie. Now, my neighbor actually, you know, we're out kind of in the wild in Lake Placid, and so he'll actually, you know, kill a deer if he's lucky, that kind of thing. And this year he gave me the deer liver, which I made into a pate. It was wonderful. But I have some left that's in the freezer. Now, you said to kill the parasites, you want to put in the freezer for several weeks. So how would you actually do raw liver in a smoothie then? Would you actually defrost it, or would you?
Well, you know what? If it's if you know the animals are really healthy, I don't think it's as much of a concern. It's more, it depends. I mean, this is a good point, because you have liver from a grass-fed, pasture-raised, pampered animal, right? That liver I would not be worried about. I would be more worried about, you know, a liver coming from a questionable source, a source that you really don't know, right? And some people go as far as to say, don't eat liver if it's from a factory farm animal. I kind of sit on the fence because I'm one of these people who believes that people have to do the best they can with what's available to them. So then you have to break that question down and say, you know, do they not eat liver at all if they can't get grass-fed, pasture-raised, you know, liver? And I like to sit on the fence on that issue simply because everybody's dealing with different circumstances. They have different budgets. They may not have a vehicle. They may have to take the bus, and they may not have access to, you know, optimal, ideal, you know, foods from local farmers. So if they're buying from a grocery store, and that's the best that they can do, I'm middle of the road. I'm saying you're going to eat that liver regardless, because I'd rather see people eat liver than not eat liver.
Okay.
I don't know if that makes any sense to you, Karen. It's just because I deal with so many people from different, you know, socioeconomic backgrounds and geographical, you know, they may have geographic boundaries where they just can't find, you know, any local farmers that are doing pasture-raised animals. So I just try to be empathetic with every single individual, and I do not speak in absolutes for that reason.
Okay. Well, thank you for that. Well, and in my mind, I was thinking, you know, some animal, some venison deer in the wild, I would think would probably be healthier than, you know, your store-bought, you know, commercially raised beef liver.
Right. I mean, that would be my instincts. I would say, you know, if it's a wild animal, the chances are you're going to be better off. I mean, of course, there's going to be exceptions to that rule. But if you, you know, are sure that the animal was healthy, raised in a healthy environment, I think that the liver should be fine, theoretically. Of course, you know, some people are going to debate that issue because you still don't necessarily know exactly what foods the animal has been into. But still, you just do the best you can with what you have available. That's the bottom line.
Okay. So freezing the liver for, 1-2 weeks, you think is good just in case? Parasites.
Yeah, just in case there's parasites. And another thing that I often talk about with my students and my clients is, you know, the liver is where we make our bile. And bile is incredibly important in terms of breaking down fats, of course. And we also need that bile to absorb, you know, the fat-soluble vitamins. And so if we have done our bodies a lot of damage over the years by eating a low-fat diet, for example, this is going to damage the liver. This is going to impair our body's ability to produce bile. So my message to your listeners is to do your utmost to heal your liver. Do your utmost to jumpstart your bile, because this is what's going to, in the long run, really help you with your overall health, physical, mental, and so on. And so what has happened, Karen, to our own livers over the years is because of eating these vegetable oils, it is basically, you know, kind of shut down our livers and impaired our ability to produce bile. And so that's why we always say we live through our liver, or you hear expressions like pamper your liver. We have to do our utmost to reverse the damage that we've done following a standard American diet. And if you talk to anybody, you know, from primitive cultures, you know, very, very primitive cultures, they believe that if you eat organ meats, it's almost like a homeopathic approach to healing that particular organ. So if you eat liver, it helps heal your liver. If you eat brain, it helps heal your brain. If you eat adrenal glands, it helps your adrenal glands. That's what they, in many cultures that Dr. Price studied, that's what they believed, right? So it could be that if you eat liver, it might help support your own liver. I can't guarantee that because I don't know how much damage every individual has done to their bodies. But, you know, when you talk to people who've done extreme diets, extreme exercise habits, you know, there's going to be a lot of impairment in terms of the body's ability to produce bile. And that's crucial. That's just crucial because we're supposed to be producing about a quart of bile a day. And because our livers are generally so weak, you know, people are lucky probably to be producing half of that.
Wow, that's really interesting.
Because you're a medical doctor. Pardon?
Oh, go ahead.
No, because you're a medical doctor, this is often what I say to my clients, because I really, really wish more doctors would understand the connection between liver and bile production. Because when my clients, when their bile production and flow improve, that's when they start feeling better. You know, their brain clarity starts getting sharper and so on. They get more energy. And it's really too bad, Karen, that we can't go to the doctor and say, how much bile am I producing? Am I producing that one quart a day? Is my gallbladder, you know, squirting out enough bile at breakfast, lunch, and dinner whenever I eat my bacon and eggs or my meat and potato lunch and dinner? You know, am I actually able to squirt out the bile from my gallbladder? And, you know, how many gallstones do I really have trapped in my bile duct system? Because the testing right now is very inadequate. And yet, you know, my clients, I tell them all, you have to assume that you are underproducing bile. You have to assume that you have gallstones. And because we cannot, unfortunately, go and get testing for any of these things, not adequate testing anyway.
Yeah, that's really fascinating. I'm going to pay more attention to that now. Now, I do energetic testing, which is pretty woo-woo stuff, but all I can tell you is that it works. We can actually ask the subconscious mind exactly how much bile it's producing and how happy the liver and gallbladder is. So from that point of view, I can get some sort of number and a rating system and be able to follow and track people. I haven't done it because I didn't think it was all that important. But now that you've highlighted and enlightened me on that, I will start doing that. Thank you.
I think anybody can, if anybody has brain fog, depression, fatigue, anxiety, insomnia, et cetera, you know, they can pretty much be guaranteed that there's a problem with their bile, because bile is what kicks out things like copper, lead, mercury, right? We got to kick this garbage out into the toilet, and we become our own toilets when bile is not working properly, when the liver is weak. So when you start feeling better, that's when you start knowing your bile is production and flow is improving.
Oh. Fascinating. Now, you're the author of a book that you just released recently, Survival of the Unfittest, How Wisdom Will Save Humans from Falling into Extinction, which we're going to do a separate show on this altogether because I really want to pick your brain on this one. And of course, one of my favorite books on addiction called Addiction, the Hidden Epidemic, Common Sense Solutions for Our Number One Health Problem. And I got to, the more I get into this, Pam, the more I'm agreeing with you, especially the addiction piece. I'm just seeing it left, right, and center, and not even the big addictions, you know, the little ones, the ones that people really think too much, that's all that important. And we talked a little bit about that last time. So can you share with us your website where people can get a copy of your book, so maybe a little preview to our show in April?
Oh, sure. My website is just my name, www.pamkilleen.com, K-I-L-L-E-N.com. And my new book, Survival of the Unfittest, is essentially about the destruction of human sexuality. So why are we seeing so many problems with infertility, low libido, birth defects in children, miscarriages, erectile dysfunction, PMS, hot flashes? You name it, Karen, the list goes on and on and on. And quite honestly, what is most concerning to me is that people are normalizing these symptoms, and they should not be, or, you know, they just are not normal. They can be prevented. It's tough sometimes to turn these situations around. It takes a lot of work on behalf of the client. But I think a more practical approach is for us to be aware of the many things that are infringing upon healthy human sexuality, and to take a preventative approach. So my book is more about a preventative approach so we can protect our children.
Oh, that sounds fantastic. Well, thank you, Pam, again for being on the show. Your wealth of information, to learn something every time I talk to you, and I really appreciate your generosity with your time.
Oh, no problem at all.
So
I look forward to speaking to you about my... Eat more liver. Enjoy your liver, everyone. Absolutely.
All right. We'll chat with you in April. Thanks, everyone, for listening in to the radio show today. Bye for now. Thank you, Pam.
Thanks, Karen. Take care. Bye-bye.